Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, got some great stuff. We're going to talk with Lee Bay. He's going to be here. We're going to talk Lucas Museum. I read your texts. They're coming in loud and clear. You definitely have something to say. So 312-981-7200 if you want to talk during the 9 o'clock hour. Lee will be here. He was actually on the committee that actually picked the location. So we'll talk with Lee about why they did and what he thinks of the news that's transpired over the last couple of days. But right now, okay, so this Friday night, the Chicago Headline Club will announce the Lissagor Awards for exemplary work in local journalism. It's a fun night that goes really, really long. It always goes long. The Headline Club will give 3 Lifetime Achievement Awards this year, one to Harry Porterfield from CBS, John Hilkovich, the longtime transportation reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Linda Lenz, a former Chicago Daily News and Sun-Times education writer, who founded and published Catalyst, a magazine that covers all things Chicago schools. Lenz retired as the publisher earlier this year after founding Catalyst in 1990. Combine that work with her work at the Sun-Times and Pioneer Press and the Chicago Daily News, and Linda has spent 47 years covering the news and education stories in this great city. Now that Linda's retired, maybe she can help us make some sense of the problems and issues and challenges facing schools when it comes to funding, performance, and, of course, labor. Linda Lenz is my guest tonight at the Big Table. Linda, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
So the Lifetime Achievement Award, that's a great honor. How do you feel?
It really took my breath away. I mean, sometimes you eye awards think, boy, that'd be nice to win someday. This never entered my mind. So it's really exciting, and especially having had all those years to be a reporter, right, an editor, publisher in the news, which I love. I mean, I'm just passionate about journalism, and that is sort of its own reward. But then to get this award, that's, yeah,
do they get, pretty cool. Now, are they going to let you make a speech? Do you get to make a speech?
Yes, I get to say a few words.
All right. Well, is it going to just all be thank yous, or are you going to go
a little deeper? No, I mean, we put together, Sylvia Ewing put together a little video, and I know each of us was invited to do that. So I'm going to do some footnotes to the video. It's not going to be a speech.
Okay. So I kind of set this up as, you know, maybe we can get a little perspective and context on the stories. But you have been covering the news. I mean, you started at the Daily News a long time ago. Talk about the news community here in Chicago, the journalism community when you started. I mean, it's a lot different today. We only have really the 2 newspapers. But talk about starting at the Chicago Daily News, what you remember about that.
Yeah. Well, number one, there weren't many women when I started. Education was not seen as a hugely important beat. And certainly that has changed over the years. Unfortunately, because of the financial situation of the press these days, you've gone from education staffs at the Tribune that were like 4, 5, down to, you know, 2, 1.5.
Right.
It's been an ebb and a flow.
But so was it because at the time they just saw this as schools weren't really political schools, there weren't really big chance? Like, why wasn't education a rich area for people, for journalists to cover?
There wasn't much made of it, really, by the community. Certainly, the African American community put on a huge boycott in the 60s, but there just wasn't much going on. But then it bubbled up so that when I started covering schools in 1979, it started with the school system going virtually bankrupt. funny thing.
What goes around comes around, right? Yeah.
And it went into the desegregation consent decree and, I mean, just one huge story after another. And so, that obviously generated more news.
Well, we kind of joke about it, you know, about the idea of deja vu or what goes around and comes around. Yeah. But I mean, the Chicago public schools and education in the city has seen a lot of the same stories over and over and over.
Yes.
It feels like we continue to have challenges and we don't seem to learn from them, or do we?
I think there has been more learning than you would expect in Chicago. And it's generated by an institution, really, that is one of the city's greatest assets, and it's called the Consortium on Chicago School Research, which maybe many in your audience are scratching your heads and saying, well, that sounds dull and boring. But they have done amazing research in the schools to find out what's working, what's not working, and why, and feed that out to schools for schools to actually respond to. And that's generated, positive change starting really when Mayor Daley took over the school system, and it's not so much as that he did that, but it was the coincidence of timing. And that has continued to go up. And while, you know, Rahm Emanuel now say things are better than when Daley left, well, that's true, but it's part of this continuum where you have seen an increase in the graduation rate. You've seen a little increase in the number of graduates signing up for four-year colleges. So there's been progress, and it is just so painful to see what's happening with the school system now, with the turmoil and lack of money.
And I want to get at that, because last night we talked about how Forrest Claypool came out and said next year there's going to be a $1.1 billion deficit. But we'll get to that in this conversation. What I'm always fascinated about, or what grabs my attention, is just how political the schools maybe have become. And that's what I want to talk to you about, because it seems like graduation rates, like you mentioned, or school funding, other things, they're all political. They're almost job performance related to a mayor today. Rahm Emanuel, if the graduation rates go down, it's Rahm Emanuel's fault. Was that always the case when you took over in 1979, where graduation rates, were they tied to the mayor?
No, because the mayor has always appointed the school board in Chicago. Some people think, when were they elected? They were never elected. But they did not have complete control over it. And so
you could point the finger at somebody else.
Yeah. And then the community and the corporate community sort of came to recognize, hey, schools are important. Increasing enrollment population of minority kids, hey, we better start paying attention. And so that, that bubbled up and made it more important for the corporate community as well.
We're talking with Linda Lenz tonight. She's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award for her work covering education in this city, both at the newspapers, at the Sun-Times and Pioneer Press, also Chicago Daily News, but also at Catalyst, which I want to talk to after the break. Catalyst was formed in 1990. It's really a magazine that takes on the issues in Chicago schools. We'll talk more with Linda here on The Download at the Big Table when we return. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Linda Lenz, who's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Chicago Headline Club for her work covering education here in town as a journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times, for the Pioneer Press, for the Chicago Daily News, and also for Catalyst, which is a magazine she founded and published starting in 1990. It's fascinating because you mentioned the consortium in the break right before. That started started in 1990.
Yeah, the thing is, we had the same goals, which is to find out what's working, what's not working, and why. And we really had the symbiotic relationship because we provided the stories that could pull people into this raw data, and they got, and we got the data to tell the stories better.
Why did you leave the Sun-Times?
I'd covered education for like 11 years, looking for a new challenge. And also, Chicago was about to elect its first local school council members. And I knew that there was going to be this big knowledge gap. And I wasn't interested in how you conduct an LSE meeting. It's the bigger issues that, you want to bring these folks into to, benefit from their perspectives.
Well, we're talking about the history of education here in Chicago. I mean, there's going to be some desegregation stories that are, and like you mentioned, boycotts in the 60s. But no other decade seem to be as crucial as the 90s. When you think about what happened in the mid-90s, 1995, that's when Mayor Daley took over the Chicago public schools from, state control. Talk about that. That was a big, big part.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. What happened is that there was this school reform legislation, 1988, decentralized the school system. And there were unrealistic expectations about what that might do for test scores, for example. And there continued to be this labor unrest. There were no strikes, but there was just, is school going to open on time? Is it not going to open on time? And this all bubbled up at a time when there was a Republican governor, a Republican Senate president, and a Republican head of the House. Mm-hmm. And these Republicans got together and said it's time to give Mayor Daley responsibility for the school system. Some thought this was a good public policy. Some thought, let's just, screw it to him.
Right. It's your problem. Right.
And they came up with this, phenomenal legislation. One, it gave him unfettered control of the school system. I mean, we've never had an elected school board here, but there was a nominating process that created hurdles for the mayor. Mm-hmm. We got rid of those. And then this legislation that made the Chicago Teachers Union on paper probably one of the weakest big city unions in the country because it listed all these things that they were no longer able to bargain over. Now, clearly, they have political clout, as we have seen. So there's power and then there's power. But it changed that. It changed finances in ways that, you know, planted the seeds for what we see today in order to get the school system open without actually raising taxes. They did, you know, funny money things, including putting pension money intended for pensions into general operating. And they did that year after year.
A lot of what's happening with the state is the same with CPS, where they just kicked the can down the road to be able to get the money to start school.
Right.
For you starting Catalyst in 1990, you say, well, okay, if there's general interest in education to do this, there's, you know, it's a magazine, it's going to be self-published, that it's going to be a challenge. But you kind of walked into one of the biggest stories in Chicago history, right, when the magazine was taken off.
Yeah, and also I need to tip my hat to the Community Renewal Society, which is the nonprofit we are part of, and they agreed to sort of take us on and have provided, you know, a foundation for us.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has turned out to be a phenomenal story, and I never anticipated that. Who would have foreseen all the things that have happened? But I do remember somebody telling me, oh yeah, I do this for 5 years, and you go on, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to take more than 5 years. And it's probably going to, you know, in one sense, it's going to take forever. I mean, these are such contentious, difficult issues that it, you know, it's going to go on forever, and you just kind of have to hope at some point leaders show some real leadership and try to bring the many diverse communities together, because you don't fix schools all just in one particular sector. You need everybody rowing in the same direction.
That was kind of the rallying cry for Mayor Daley. I mean, in 1995 was, you know what, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm going to bring in my people. We're going to do it my way because, you know what, enough of all this, you know, bureaucracy. No one cares about the kids. We're going to get it done this way. And he introduces Paul Vallis, and he introduces Gary Chico, and he introduces big personalities like Vallis to come in. I mean, when that happened, I mean, we saw mass layoffs. We saw, you know, like a whole different kind of Chicago public schools.
Yeah. Well, you can credit, I think, Paul Vallis and the Mayor Daley for having brought in a sense of accountability, because there really wasn't any under the school reform act that was passed earlier. The thing is, they went overboard and they did things which research had shown were not going to work. And they just really kind of blew it on that. And we lost ground. And while, you know, more accountability is a plus, but the way they carried out, especially holding kids back if they didn't, you know, do well, and there had been lots of research saying, hey, this is only going to make the kids drop out. Well, they said, we're going to do it better. But they didn't do it better.
Well, I mean, this started, you know, as we kind of know modern Chicago public schools in 1995. It's amazing to think that that's 20 years ago.
I know.
It's hard to believe. But it really started what we know. I mean, accountability changed. But we also, you know, we've had some big names come through at superintendents. Yeah. Arnie Duncan was here.
He was barely known outside the school community when he was made school superintendent.
He was. What was he doing?
He was like a mid-level administrator inside Chicago Public Schools, but he had caught the eye of some corporate types who were really interested in the school system, who kind of put in a word with the mayor, and it happened. And then he became U.S. Secretary of Education.
Yeah, right.
Who would have thought it?
Yeah, good promotion.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is that there were a lot of people that were handpicked by the mayor to come in and sort of keep the seat warm or do things to what it felt like Mayor Daley was in control. But in that time, there were so many different initiatives, whether it was turnaround, whether it was the stuff coming from the federal government, you know, No Child Left Behind, all sorts of ways that it seemed like every single year there was a different direction for schools in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Paul Vallis's response to the school system was to create more programs. And this is not exactly to your point, but it's related. You know, more programs, but how long can they go on, and are they integrated? Improving a school is more than just throwing programs into it. But then you did start to see, and this is under President Clinton as well, some more accountability on how teachers get evaluated and what happens with schools. And again, we're coming to see that, you know, this is not a silver bullet, and it's sort of on balance unclear how good it is going to turn out for those things.
Okay, we're going to take a break and get to the news, because I do want to talk about, I mean, the big issue here in Chicago obviously is labor.
Right.
The Chicago Teachers Union, as you mentioned, in 1995, had you know, was deemed weaker from that deal. But they have grown, and they have, with political power, been able to, you know, stop the start of the school year with Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
And also talk about, you know, the closed schools and the sort of equality issues that Chicago Public Schools, selective enrollment. There's so many things
yes.
we could talk about, Linda.
No, it's so complicated.
The Lens is the retired publisher and founder of Catalyst. Also was a journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Daily News, Pioneer Press. She's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Chicago Headline Club on Friday. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table after the news. Stay with us. This is Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Linda Lenz. She's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Chicago Headline Club. Congratulations.
Thank you. Have you said that for her? Do you want to say that again?
Yeah, I'll say, hey, you know, it's good. You got to remind everybody of your successes. That's what you have to do. Linda is the publisher and founder of Catalyst. She retired this year. She also was a journalist at the Chicago Sun-Times, Pioneer Press, Chicago Daily News. 47 years in the business.
And it's been fascinating every single day.
All right. So we're talking specifically about education, because that was your focus. That was your specialty. You know, thinking about those years, especially we talk about the decade, the 90s, where there was a school takeover and Mayor Daley came, you know, rode in on his white horse and he was like, well, we're going to save the schools. A lot changed, and a lot that's still the blueprint or the fingerprints of that are still on today's schools. One area in particular is selective enrollment and charter schools.
Yes.
It kind of started out of all that.
It did. The legislation for charter schools was passed, in the mid-90s? Most contentious issue I have ever covered in, you know, all those years covering education. It has just created this huge divide that it makes it hard to get stuff done.
You know, for people listening out there, and we'll talk about selective enrollments, but first we'll talk about charter schools. You know, I always have a hard time with this issue because I'm not sure how to understand charter schools. Tell us about charter schools. Why do people think they're bad?
Yeah. Well, some is philosophical. It's like, why are we letting these private organizations teach our kids? And some of it, you know, is political and deals with jobs, because you have charter school,
right.
you know, more non-union. Charter schools.
Most of it's non-union.
You know, they're going to be, you're not going to see growth in the regular school teacher corps, and that's part of it. But, you know, a historical point here kind of puts it in context, too, and that is people will complain, sometimes in Chicago, but certainly outside, about, oh, these corporations and big, you know, organizations that want to, you know, start these charter schools and, you know, whatever, try to do it just for a select group of kids. Thing is, most of Chicago schools and charter schools and its biggest ones, Noble and Perspectives, were started by Chicago public school teachers who had been trying for very long to do innovative stuff within the school system.
They just couldn't get it done because of the bureaucracy,
get it done.
Because
and Perspectives
else,
in particular,
right.
it was a school within a school, and then it actually became like a satellite school. And when charters came along, they said, well, hell yeah, yes, I'm going to go for that.
Right.
And there has always really been schools of last resort, and that's the problem with charter schools. The big complaint today is that they are siphoning kids away from neighborhood schools that have only weakened those neighborhood schools.
Right.
Now, that's been going on ever since you started selective enrollment, which was during the 1990s. But it has gotten to the extent now where you have neighborhood schools that are just schools.
There's
almost in the name only. There was one where a freshman class had like 50-some kids in it. Now, those really dire circumstances tend to be in very disadvantaged communities. And one of the reasons that parents will pick charter schools is to get their kids out of a dangerous school and into, you know, a better community, as it were.
As well.
And selective enrollment as well.
And that was almost by design, the concept of selective enrollments was to take people and create these schools that, you know, you would test into in some cases or, you know.
Well, that was designed to keep to the middle class in the city, really. I mean, you know, the more that you give choice, you know, you're going to have this differentiation. WBEZ did a really interesting study finding that there continues to be a three-tiered school system in Chicago, with the relatively more wealthy kids. They go to the selective enrollment schools. One row below that, they go to charter schools, and the most disadvantaged kids, they go to the neighborhood high schools. So it's not as though those schools can kind of pull themselves up by their bootstraps to
compete with charter schools. It's not like they have bad teachers.
No, they need more investment of resources. I mean, Illinois is among just a handful of schools that actually spends more money on its poor kids than it does on its more money on its rich kids than it does on its poor kids.
And it almost defies the idea of public schools, the concept that public schools, your taxes pay for a public school, you get to go to the neighborhood school. It's a free thing, and we're gonna teach your kids, and we're gonna be proud of the fact, and we're gonna teach them to come out and be able to be productive citizens and move on. Yeah. It defies that logic in a way, and we saw that a couple of years back, and we'll get to the teachers union, but we saw the big closing of all the schools. That's what really this was about. There weren't a lot of kids going to those neighborhood schools, so it was really, you know, in a way, Mayor Emanuel's hands were tied. If he's going to save money to be able to, have to kill these schools off, which was excruciating to watch.
Yeah, and I don't know how much money they ended up saving, but he would have, you know, been lambasted for why are you paying to keep this huge school, you know, from the 1980s, I think that's it.
Maybe.
Right, open. So he was in a no-win situation there.
All right, let's talk about the Chicago Teachers Union. Karen Lewis has brought life into the Chicago Teachers Union.
I'd say it had it before, but the previous, it's been a couple, quite a few years. But Jacqueline Vaughn was a very strong union leader, but she wasn't as public with it. She was a bit more courteous.
Well, we started to see Karen kind of come up through the ranks, and when she took over, it was really when she really made her name when she was taking on Arne Duncan. That's where you saw she had she started to get headlines for. She made fun of his lisp a little bit. She started to get a little bit more political, like you said, in front of the cameras.
Yeah, well, this union sees itself as part of a larger movement than schools. It sees itself as part of a social justice movement. And it's supporting nonprofit organizations that are working for equality. Now, some would say it's bought off nonprofit organizations, you know, so it can be viewed from different perspectives.
Well, obviously, you know, they got everybody's attention when Mayor Emanuel had campaigned on the idea of a longer school day.
Yeah, he handled that so badly.
And there was a strike, right?
Things haven't gone right since then.
Well, let me ask about Mayor Emanuel as a school leader. I mean, we've seen his last education superintendent, Barbara Bird Bennett, in corruption charges. We've seen him have a strike on his hands where he effectively lost that negotiation. And we saw him have to close schools. I mean, for people looking at Mayor Emanuel, his track record right now in education in public schools is not great.
No, it's not. I mean, and part of it's financial. They're just, how much can you do? Now, the union would argue there are a lot of places where you can get money. Well, that's true. But the politics of getting that money are daunting, to say the least. I mean, arguably, he's in a more difficult financial situation than any previous superintendent.
When you see what's happening with the Chicago Public Schools now, with a projected $1.1 billion deficit this year, and the arguments with the state government, with no budget, obviously, but with a Republican governor who seems hell-bent on changing the formula and giving less to the Chicago Public Schools, where are we at? I mean, you've covered this city for 30. I mean, you did education for 35 years. Are we? I mean, is this the most dire you've seen, or was it worse, say, in 1979?
Yeah, I don't have a good track record on this one. I can't tell you the number of years where I said, okay, it's gotten so bad financially. Surely they're going to fix it. And they never did. But I think maybe we're at that point right now. Now, I mean, if you believe Governor Rauner, he's saying there are interest groups, bipartisan groups, trying to come up with plans for this, you know, this big bargain that he's talking about. I mean, they have to solve this problem at some point. And also, perhaps what's lying in the background is the situation with the rating houses and all that. They may see on the horizon that this is going to just financially fall apart completely.
Well, they're not going to be able to borrow money. That's already happened.
Yeah. But I've got to, I mean, that's one thing that can make the move. And so that may be, you know, in the background there.
Okay. Well, I mean, the million-dollar question is, are the schools better off? Are they better than they were when you started covering schools in 1979?
They absolutely are better, and they would be better yet if it weren't for the turmoil and if there were additional resources. I mean, you do see a significant rise in the graduation rate, and some people say, oh, they're just pushing kids ahead. But the consortium on Chicago School Research crunched some other numbers and said, yeah, this is legitimate. Now, part of it wasn't legitimate, and the school system had to skin back, I think, 3%.
Yeah, right.
But I think people understand more about what it takes to improve a school. And it's about leadership. It's about working together. The consortium, which you're probably tired of hearing me talk about that. One thing they found is one of the biggest predictor of whether a school was going to improve was the degree of trust among the adults in the building. Hmm. People have come to understand that, you know, you need to work on trying to get folks to respect each other, work together. And that makes a huge difference.
From your vantage point as the founder and publisher of Catalyst and retiring this year, I mean, obviously, will you see the stress level, not just on resources, but I mean, class sizes. I mean, we're talking, you know, they're moving. They don't have the room in most of these schools.
Yeah. They don't have the counselors.
They don't have the counselors that suburbanites
take for granted.
All of that. Plus the fact that, you know, there's labor unrest and I mean, do you see, you look into the sort of Catalyst crystal ball, I mean, how do we find our way out of this?
Well, you know, it gets so bad that, you know, they have to do something, have to come together. But, you know, Mayor Daley started the Select Enrollment Schools to keep the middle class there. Well, you know, the turmoil and the uncertainty is not going to keep the middle
not
class
to mention,
here.
Not to mention if you're and if you're a parent listening in Chicago right now of a seventh grader, the stress is as at college level to get into these selective enrollment schools.
It is. Yeah. But also there's a new effort coming out of the Chicago Community Trust that's aimed at trying to make neighborhood schools viable. And they're doing it by investing in collaborative efforts between folks in the community and the schools. And you really need that because, you know, school people alone can't fix these schools. You got to include the community. And so there's hold your breath. We've seen efforts before, but this one, I think, seems to have some gravitas with it.
Linda Lenz is the, she just retired. She was the publisher and founder of Catalyst, the magazine that covered Chicago schools. Also was with the Sun-Times, Pioneer Press, Chicago Daily News. She's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Chicago Headline Club on Friday. We'll continue our conversation. We'll wrap it up right here after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Linda Lenz. She's the publisher and founder of Catalyst back in 1990. Before that, wrote for education, covered education for the Chicago Sun-Times, Pioneer Press. Before that, Chicago Daily News. 47 years in the business here. Retired just this winter.
Yeah, I have 1 month under my belt.
You have 1 month?
Yeah, my first day of retirement was April Fool's Day, but I said... It's not a joke.
So how's it going? Do you miss being in the news business?
Well, I'm not totally out of it. As you notice, we're having this conversation here tonight. I'm out of the business, but I'm not out of the education world. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And so I'm just kind of sampling. You know, I went to a session on podcasting and I went to a session on how to do freelancing, and I'm just going to
dabble around the edges, right?
Yeah, around the edges, yeah.
You're looking for a side door to get in, right back in.
Well, not right back. I'm going to take my time. Any good offers, folks, let me know.
Linda, you know, obviously you've covered, we talked about it, 47 years and 30 plus of that was covering education. For you, what were the highlights?
Well, there are different ways of looking at that. What sort of resonates most with me is the fabulous reception that, you know, Catalyst has gotten. People who say, I wouldn't know what's going on in the school system if it weren't Catalyst. Now, these aren't always Pulitzer Prize winning stories. These are just informed reporting by really, you know, wonderful journalists to find out what's going on, let people know what's going on so they can participate in what's going on. So that's one thing that's gratifying to me. But another thing, which is, you know, along the sort of Pulitzer route, not literally but figuratively, is the amazing work of Sarah Karp, who did the first reporting that led to, you know, federal charges against Barbara Bird Bennett and her pleading guilty.
If I'm not mistaken, she was our first... She was in the first show of The Download, first or second guest on that story, because we started this around this time last year. Sarah was on to talk about Barbara Bird Bennett because the investigation
was just fabulous reporting. And for me, her story wasn't just about the corruption part. She went in to talk about how this was a crummy educational program. I mean, it was just a masterful piece, and that was really exciting and clearly, you know, had an impact. And now she's up for 5 Lissa Gore Awards on Friday, so I'm sure she will pick up a few more honors. You know, another thing that actually feels good for me is that, you know, we were the first of what has now become many. There are online education publications like Catalyst now in 7 other cities and growing. And there's one that started in New York City called Gotham Schools, and it partnered with one that was in Denver, and they've now created a network where they started outlets in Tennessee and Indiana and Detroit. So it's exciting to see what has happened with education journalism. And it's the same kind of stuff we do, which is just serious, well-informed reporting on what's happening in the schools.
It's a far cry from when you started and they're like, schools? Yeah. That's fine. Leave that be. That's fine.
Yeah,
we don't need reporters
on that. That's where you got broken in and you can't wait to move up from it.
All right. So for you, you spent your whole career here in Chicago.
Yes.
What does this town mean to you? What kept you here for all these years?
Great jobs. And also, you know, family to some extent. I know certainly as my mother was getting older, I wasn't about to, you know, go out of town. But I had this wonderful job at Pioneer Press where I covered politics. And that was when the North Shore had Republicans who were, you know, Governor Ogilvie and Attorney General. And so there was just a lot of politics going on. And then, you know, at the Daily News, I started out general assignment, but then did editorial writing. And I actually wanted to get back to reporting. And so when the Daily News folded and the Sun-Times started, I ended up, first I thought I wasn't going to have a job, but I did end up with a choice between being a beat reporter, education, and being general assignment. And I thought, oh, let me take education. I'll have more control of my life. And also I'm just more interested in issues than fires and shootings and that kind of stuff.
Could you see a life in which you didn't have the education beat? I mean, could you have stayed in the political world? Could you have done other things
if it was sort of serious, aimed at improving the community, yes. But I mean, every year you gather more information about education and you become a better reporter because you know more and more people pay attention to you. So, you're not anxious to walk away.
Well, it's obviously one of the things that keeps our communities together, and it's something that we need to know more about, how our kids are being educated and how the schools are being run. And Catalyst and Linda Lenz has done that for us here in Chicago for decades. She's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Chicago Headline Club on Friday. You got your speech ready? Are you ready?
Yeah,
you got a couple
much.
Days.
It's going to be short and sweet.
She also was a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, Pioneer Press, and the Chicago Daily News. Mm-hmm. Over 47 years covering news, just retired last month. Linda Lenz, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you very much. This has been a pleasure.